Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Illinois Professional Licensing Associates podcast, brought to you by healthcare practice and licensing defense lawyer Michael V. Favia. I'm your host, Nick Augustine, and today our guest is Chicago area criminal defense attorney Gus Kostopoulos. We're going to talk about the intersection of criminal defense and professional licensing defense. Attorney Gus Kostopoulos will tell us about his work and how and why he refers his licensed professional clients to Michael V. Favia for licensing defense before, during, or after Mr. Kostopoulos represents them with their pending criminal matters and charges. Gus Kostopoulos is a former first-chair prosecutor with the state's attorney's office, and on both sides of prosecution and defense, he has been involved in thousands of criminal cases, ranging from misdemeanors to first-degree murder cases. Let's give a warm welcome and say hello to Gus Kostopoulos.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Gus, and I'm looking forward to talking about one of my favorite topics, which is criminal defense.
It's an interesting topic. There's no shortage of movies, news articles, like I said, that discuss this area. So it's a very interesting topic, something I've been interested in for many years, Nick.
Absolutely wonderful. I can remember when working as a law clerk in an office not far from where you're likely located, I was asked to write a motion to exclude prior bad acts, and the situation was a man in a van by a school, and apparently the man with the van by the school had an issue certain, you know, before, and I thought, well, this is odd because it seems like the same exact situation, and the guy I was working for said, different time of day, different lighting, different people walk, so many different. You know, there's so much involved in the state needing to prove their case, and that is what you are there for, Gus, to make sure that people have their right day in court, that they have their, you know, they're allowed a constitutional defense, and that's what you're for.
Yeah, and I enjoy it, and I've known Michael Favia for many years now, and he's a great attorney, and I've had the opportunity to work with him on a number of cases, and it's something that, you know, professional liability defense as well as criminal defense are both important areas. You really hold people's lives in your hands. And there's a lot of things that people should know about if they have a professional license that, that you know, they should be aware of should they ever find themselves subject to an investigation or in trouble.
You know, and it's something that we'll talk about in depth today, and it's something that scares me to think that someone goes through something that they think is a minor issue that's not going to come back and haunt them later. And sometimes you can find yourself too deep in and have damage that needs to be undug, and you've got more of a problem than you even realize. But before we talk about that, tell us a little bit about you personally, why you like criminal defense, how you got involved into your practice, and just how you got to where you are today and why you love it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Nick. So I graduated law school, and I got a job as a prosecutor at the state's attorney's office, and I enjoyed it a great deal. I got to manage a courtroom. I've got to manage a number of litigations against involving all types of cases. I tried hundreds of cases either in front of judges or in front of juries. I had a caseload of thousands of cases, so I got to deal with all kinds of cases, all kinds of people. And I very much enjoyed it, and I got to do justice for victims of crime, and I got to help a lot of people in the community, and it was a very enjoyable job. And that was my first real job after graduating for law school. And after a period of time, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to, you know, have the opportunity to work for myself. So I left the state's attorney's office and started my own law firm, and I very much enjoyed it. I got to meet with people. I got to deal with people on a one-on-one basis. And I dealt with a lot of people who were charged with criminal offenses. And many people, there's a lot of misconceptions about criminal law. A lot of people that find themselves in contact with the criminal justice system are good people who just made a small mistake, didn't really do anything that harmful, but they find themselves in significant trouble. Sometimes it's people that have a substance abuse problem. Sometimes it's people that are going through a divorce or family issues. Sometimes it's people that lost a job and are under stress and make bad decisions. So I deal with a lot of people that are not bad people, but made some bad decisions, got themselves in trouble, and they need to make sure that their lives are not completely destroyed. And very often, those people have professional licenses, and we have to be careful, not just in terms of criminal exposure, but also to make sure that no harm comes to their professional licenses.
Absolutely. Very important. You know, I want to ask you a question I've never asked anyone before, but it just kind of occurred to me. When you're working as a prosecutor, you know, and you talk about people who make small mistakes under stress, bad decisions, and I'm not at all ever going to knock anyone who went right into criminal defense and didn't work as a prosecutor before, but I can remember coming right out of law school, it was those jobs were there to get, and a lot of people were going into private practice and coming out of big law firms, and there's so many people doing so many things, but a lot of my friends also went and worked at the state's attorney's office, and I just never thought to ask when they're doing that, and they've got the defense lawyer on the other side. I mean, they're obviously up against each other. Do you ever feel, you know, a little bit bad for someone who doesn't have, you know, is not making the best argument, their lawyer's not doing the best job? You're just thinking, man, this person just really doesn't, you know, a good person, you know, and now I've got to, you know, prosecute him here. I don't know, just, I wonder about, you know, the thoughts about that before being on both sides of the fence.
Sure, and that's one of the things I want to talk about a little bit today in our podcast. Prosecutors sometimes get a little bit of a bad rap, and you know, there are cases were mishandled, that's correct. But my experience has been the vast majority of prosecutors are very ethical, very conscientious, and the rules say that it's not their job to win every case or get the maximum punishment. It's the prosecutor's job to seek justice. So when I was a prosecutor, and now many prosecutors I deal with right now from the opposite side, they take that very seriously, and they try and be as fair as they can. You know what I mean? And it's been my experience working with all the different state's attorney's offices in Illinois that they're staffed by some very, very good people who take their obligation to do justice very seriously, and they try and do the fair thing. So to go to your point, sometimes even if a person made some mistakes, doesn't have the best lawyer, you know, the lawyer's not making the best argument, good prosecutors, when they make an offer, they'll take things into account and they'll try and be fair to people. And that's been my experience working both sides. And one thing we have to consider is when we watch cases on TV, we watch jury trials, we watch hearings in front of a judge, the vast majority of cases are plea negotiated. So it matters a great deal what offer a prosecutor gives and negotiates with a defense lawyer, because that doesn't usually make news and headlines, but that's the majority of how most cases are resolved.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing up those points, because I've known a lot of good people on both sides, and I think it's absolutely so helpful to have that experience. A point about Mike Favia as well, as his role as a former chief prosecutor for the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation, before it was IDPR, before IDFPR, as a former chief prosecutor and now in defense on that end, he also sees both sides of the coin and knows that the state is working on its own duty to make sure that the people of the state of Illinois are well protected and in good care with good professionals. So both you and he have that dual appreciation of how things work. So let's talk about why you find it so important to refer certain cases to a healthcare licensing attorney like Mike Favia, and what type of cases those are, and what comes up with people with professional licenses. And is it just dentists, doctors, and nurses, or all the other licensed professions as well, of which there are countless? I want to say like 200 licensed professions or something like that.
No, you're entirely correct, Nick. So let me kind of go through a little bit about how these issues occur. The vast majority of cases anybody in criminal defense will do are not murders or horribly large crimes. They're usually routine things that an ordinary person that makes a few mistakes, has some stresses in his or her life, can encounter. So it could be drunk driving, DUI cases. It could be domestic batteries, which tend to happen when people have marital problems, so they might be going through a divorce. It could be possession of controlled substances. It could be, retail thefts and thefts and shoplifting cases. Sometimes people embezzle. So there's a number of different things that someone could find themselves in the office of a criminal defense lawyer for. One of the first questions I ask people when I meet them is if they have any professional licenses. And another important question, not necessarily subject to this interview, is whether they have immigration issues, whether they're U.S. citizens or not. Because whenever you're charged with a crime, everybody wants to avoid certain things. First of all, if they can get the case dismissed, obviously that's the first goal. But if there is going to be any kind of exposure, everybody wants, obviously, not to be incarcerated, not to have a criminal record. But in addition to that, if you have a professional license, you need to make sure this does not impact your professional license in a negative way. And whenever someone has a professional license as a client of mine, I encourage them to speak to Michael Favia before we take any action on the case to fully know what the exposure is, because that affects the strategy, that affects many things. And I can go into that in more detail. But essentially, and I can give some examples. In the healthcare field, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, if you get a conviction for a domestic battery, that's something that can be a pretty significant consequence with the IDFPR. So this is something where we would want to either make sure we win the case, or if there's going to be a negotiation, make sure it could be negotiated to something palatable so that there are no consequences, or at least minimal consequences, when it comes to professional licensing.
So settling for something, for a lesser included charge or something?
Right. So that's one thing. So here's why this is very important. If a client comes in and they have a professional license, we always go through what their potential exposure could be. And also there's a requirement that when people are are members of licensed professionals, they often have a self-report requirement. And it's different for different professions. So I always have clients speak to Mike about any self-report requirements they might have, so that they can report themselves to the department if it's something that's legally mandated. Now, one of the things that we have to go through is we look at every case to find a way to win if it's possible. And what starts in a criminal case is you go to court with your lawyer, and your lawyer requests discovery, which is copies of all the police reports, any videos, any evidence the government has, and then we review it. The lawyer and the client review it together, and we form an opinion whether or not we can win the case at trial or subject to a pretrial motion. And it's never something that's completely 100% predictable. Nobody can predict with 100% fidelity if they're going to win a trial, if they're going to win a motion. So very often, talk turns to negotiation, where possibly we can get a person into a deferral program where they don't have to plead guilty, or we negotiate for an outcome where there's no incarceration and there's no conviction on the person's record. At that point, it becomes very important to know the professional liability consequences of an act. For example, you might end up getting no criminal record, but it might be an admission for purposes of the IDFPR. And it might be something where the IDFPR will have consequences. Whereas if we had negotiated for another offense that the IDFPR does not take so seriously, then you could have possibly avoid professional consequences. So it's very important that we consult with Mike to understand what the consequences would be on a case. And I could give you a few examples about that. Recently, I had a dentist that had a domestic battery case, and there was talk of negotiation short of any type of trial. So we consulted with Mike. We got information, and we basically decided that nothing that the state offered was palatable. So we ended up doing a trial and winning the trial, so he got a complete dismissal. There have been other cases where we were able to negotiate something for other professionals where the IDFPR would not cause any licensure issues, and my client took the negotiation, and we're happy with the outcome. And I can go through that in a lot more detail, But that's why it's important to have a good professional license attorney like Mike Favia consulting if a professional ever has a criminal case.
There are so many different scenarios that I can think of to ask you, but the one that always seems to, that issue spotting trigger, is the multi-state and interstate things. So we have the, well, there are licensing compacts among different states where healthcare professionals, for example, can with ease be licensed from one state to the next, so they could be in their regular office healthcare practice in somewhere in Chicago area, and they could be doing telemedicine where they're licensed in other neighboring states. They also might have a vacation home in a neighboring state, and on the way home from the vacation, they might be hit by a commercial vehicle, police on the scene, but our guy has had a few too many beverages before leaving town. So now you've got a potential DUI charge that's in maybe the doctors in Illinois. They have a potential citation and charge in Wisconsin, and they also have a license to practice medicine in Indiana in addition to Illinois. So now you've got the interstate licensing issues and the National Practitioner Data Bank, where if you have to report to one state, you report to the other. And now you've got a whole mess of issues, because what might not affect them in Illinois could cause them to have suspension or discipline in Indiana. And then now what happens in the future, because they want to go to Florida and set up shop and retire down in the sun. So what a mess to figure out. And what do you do with the DWI in Wisconsin? So people can see how it can be quite a thing to figure out.
It can be very difficult. And one of the scenarios that happens very often that people have to be very careful about is there's basically two types of conduct that professionally licensed people can have interaction with the criminal justice system. The first is any type of criminal offense that any person, whether they're a professional or not, couldn't find themselves in trouble for: drunk driving, domestic battery, drugs. And then there are also certain types of offenses that interact with their profession. Like very often in the healthcare field, we have issues with diverting, which is something where, healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, have the same stresses and the same frailties as people who are not professionals, and they can find themselves becoming addicted to substances. But unlike most people, they have easy access to these substances. So there are a number of cases where a pharmacist, say, or a doctor or some other professional will divert drugs under their care, prescription drugs, themselves, to abuse themselves, or sometimes even to sell them. And that'll trigger both a criminal investigation as well as an IDFPR investigation. And the person has to be very careful how to handle that type of scenario, because in the one hand, they don't want to be charged with a felony criminal offense, and on the other hand, they don't want to lose their license. And I've had situations like that where we can have a joint strategy, where we can jointly defend both. And the way we do that is, as a general matter, in a criminal case, a person wants to assert his right to counsel and not cooperate with the police initially. Later on, they might choose cooperation with the government, but initially, people have to be careful not to incriminate themselves. But if there's a parallel IDFPR investigation, unless a person wants to voluntarily give up their professional license, which nobody ever does, they're going to have to give an explanation to the IDFPR. So in cases like that, it's good to have a team of both a criminal lawyer and an IDFPR defense lawyer like Mike, so that you can gather the evidence, you can come to a consistent, true statement, you can defend the license, and at the same time make sure that you're minimizing the risks of criminal exposure. So you're right, there's a lot of different angles, and it becomes very complicated when a person has a license, especially a license in a variety of jurisdictions.
Wow. How often does mental health come in? The reason for my question is I always think when someone gets in trouble for, a drunk driving ticket or something, that the attorney might say, go do some counseling, sign up for a program before you even have court. That might be something that bodes well for them there, but then, mental health issues and things, I just don't know if that could be problematic in a professional licensing issue with the IDFPR. I know that many licensed people, especially attorneys, would be remiss to admit they had, no one wants to say, I have a problem with this or I'm struggling with that, and I just wonder how often mental health is a component of these issues.
Mental health is often a component. Unfortunately, in our society, when people have mental health issues, they inevitably find themselves in contact with the criminal justice system. And often for maybe not the worst offenses, but they find themselves in contact with the criminal justice system. That's less of an issue with licensed professionals, because when you're a licensed professional, it takes a certain discipline and organization to finish all the education, to take all the tests, and to get a professional license. So I think it's less common to have mental health issues among the licensed professional population than the general population. But I've noticed that substance abuse issues can still be very high among licensed professionals, because very often that's a subject of stress. It's a subject of bad life circumstances like marital breakdown or employment stresses. So I've noticed that that there are people where they do that. And in general, my experience has been the best thing to do, both in terms of a criminal case as well as for professional regulations, is to get good counseling. Get involved in counseling, do what needs to be done, and then at the criminal case, if the case is resolved short of a trial, if it's resolved by some kind of negotiation or some type of plea negotiation where the judge is involved, they will look very favorably at a person that's done a fair amount of counseling and dealt with their substance abuse issues. And my experience with the IDFPR, I don't represent people at the IDFPR, but I've worked with Mike and spoken to Mike at length. And my experience is that also helps, because if you can show that you're a professional that's dealing with your issues, getting the necessary counseling to deal with any substance abuse or mental health issues, then the department would feel far more comfortable letting you practice your profession, knowing that the public would be protected because you're dealing with your issues.
Well, especially if you have someone that you do not – if I'm on the IDFPR side and I've got someone who is having issues as such and I don't see that they're doing anything to prevent a further occurrence, I'm not letting that person right back into the operating room, to the dental office, or wherever – not knowing if they're going to reoffend. And I can tell you that there are, in years of doing work with Mike on some of these things, I have read and heard of and seen all sorts of things that would blow most people's minds, my goodness. And sometimes also probation comes up in a part. So where it seems that one case might open or close, and if, for example, your criminal defense matter may be, closed as far as they have a probation period now or something.
Right.
I would wonder if maybe the IDFPR case, does that stay open then during probation? I know it may sound like a very scary thing, but if someone's on probation for a period of time, that would just feel like everyone is, all eyes are on you. You better behave.
Right. My experience has been that criminal investigations move very, very quickly, and charging decisions are made fairly quickly. I'll give examples of parallel IDFPR and criminal matters. One is the example of diverting, where basically this is the type of thing where both the department as well as law enforcement would be interested in. And there could be other types of things like that. The criminal justice system tends to move very quickly. My experience is the department moves relatively slowly in professional investigations. So often a criminal investigation will be finished before the IDFPR does very much. So they do work, work in parallel, and the one doesn't directly affect the other. So they each operate according to their own timetables. But very often there are similar things that you need to do to defend both. And often we can get someone on probation or some type of probation where it does not count as a criminal conviction and they don't have to worry about a criminal record. And then at the same time, it's often possible for Mike to get the department to get them on some type of probationary period where you know, the department is not going to take away their license, but they're going to give them a lot of scrutiny. And, you know, and that way the public is protected. People get their life back in order. There's also a lot of cases. We're talking about cases that are negotiated. But I think it's important to note something else. There are a great many cases that when a person contacts an attorney during an investigation where they think they might have done something wrong, before they're charged, before a complaint's made to the IDFPR, very often we're able to get no charges filed criminally, no complaints sustained by the IDFPR because the investigation stage is managed right. So we talk a lot about how to deal with cases where people are found guilty, but very often if a person has the good judgment to immediately call a lawyer if they think they're under a criminal investigation or if they think somebody's going to complain to the IDFPR, very often you can avoid any kind of charging. And I can give you some examples. I've had potential clients that have embezzling type matters where I've had other clients that have potential drug diverting type matters. And we got ahead of an investigation and nothing happened in terms of criminal prosecution and nothing happened in terms of discipline at the IDFPR. So timing is important. If a person thinks they might have done something wrong or they might be in trouble, the earlier you call a lawyer, the far better you are in terms of getting a positive outcome.
Good information and very true. It's just a good posture and a good strategy. Another issue that may come up is someone who receives, let's say they get a DUI and they've talked to enough people and they say, well, you know, those lawyers can't do anything on a first offense. It's all standard. It's the same standard deal. Save the money, go in there, you know, get yourself into an AA program, you know, go through the steps. This is what my lawyer did. Go in there, you know, go before the judge, do it on your own and, you know, plead to this. And then they say, okay, and then they go to call Mike Fabian and they say, you know, I didn't have a criminal lawyer represent me, but I need to do this. And lo and behold, now they've got admissions and who knows what all that is just not going to be in their favor. Is there any opportunity to help them? What do you do?
That can happen. And there are time periods when you can vacate a plea. So generally, if somebody goes in and pleads guilty and there are and they didn't really realize the consequences, especially the professional liability consequences, often we can go back and vacate the plea if it's within 30 days of when the plea entered. And let's say they had a lawyer that didn't really appreciate the professional liability consequences, or they tried to resolve it themselves without a lawyer. Often within 30 days, we can get it vacated. After 30 days, it becomes much harder. There are certain motions that can be run. But I would say immediately the time to get involved is when you think you might be in trouble. I can give examples. I had someone in a healthcare field that was accused of improperly, you know, touching a patient, you know what I mean? Which can happen. I mean, sometimes people are genuinely guilty of that. Like the Larry Nassar case is famous in the news now. He did it to, I don't know how many hundred girls, and rightfully he suffered very harsh consequences for that. But sometimes it can also be a misunderstanding. Sometimes it can be a misunderstanding. It can be, you know, an error in perception. But it's still extremely risky for a healthcare professional. So I had somebody contact me right away when he thought there were going to be, you know, a possible investigation. I handled it right at the beginning, and there were no IDFPR or criminal consequences, even though the government actually tried to get the, you know, the person recorded on a wire. They did some things to try and investigate this person. But it's important to get ahead of someone, an investigation right away. Other times I've had cases involving embezzlement, other things where we got ahead of the investigation and nothing happened. People often get letters from the IDFPR. Even before the letter, people know if one of their patients or customers or clients suspects them of wrongdoing or if they might actually have some exposure. So it's important to talk either to a professional licensing lawyer like Mike or a criminal defense lawyer like me right away. And when we need another professional, like if Mike has a case, then there may be a criminal exposure, he would contact me and we would discuss it. If I have a case with professional exposure, I would contact Mike, we would discuss it. But it's important to get involved right away, right when people get a letter from the IDFPR saying that a complaint's been made. That would be the time to call Mike. And my experience has been the vast majority of either criminal complaints or IDFPR letters are resolved without any consequence if you get in front of it right away.
The importance is not to, I mean, I've seen some awful things where people, and more like attorneys who have ignored, you know, within the attorney discipline, you know, it's not the IDFPR, it's different, you know, but people who have ignored letters and just think his problem's going to go away. I just never understand that. You know, digging a hole and putting your head in the sand is not how to get forward in life. And it is not wrong to admit that you either have a problem or getting help or you didn't do it or whatever the case is, but don't hide from it. Call someone, call right away. Don't represent yourself. Don't try to handle it all yourself. And you know, even, you know, Mike will talk about how oftentimes healthcare professionals and doctors may believe that, well, I can handle this small thing and I'll just handle it myself with the IDFPR because I'm intelligent. I know more than, you know, it's just not advisable. Always work with a professional. They have your back. There's all these sayings about the person who represents themselves as the professional has a fool for a client. It rings
right.
True. But, Gus, there's so many interesting examples of all this, and it's very interesting. And I thank you so much for your time and sharing about these. And as we have more things that may develop and other topics for other shows, we'll have you back on to talk about those as well. In the meantime, how do people get a hold of you if they want to? And like I always say, if you hear about or learn someone who's a good criminal defense lawyer, put them in your phone before you need them because you never know. And it might not be for you. It might be for your neighbor or a friend. But always have people ready to go. I mean, we have insurance, you know, before we drive a car because we don't know if we're going to run into someone or get hit. The same thing with every day you go to work. You don't know what could happen. And also, in so many of the, you know, within healthcare organizations, there are times that liability can come downhill from someone else within your organization. So it might not even be you, but you might be connected in with something else. So it's just so important, like having insurance for everything else and being proactive, to have attorneys and professionals lined up in ahead of time in case you'd ever need them. So, Gus, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, first, it's a very good question. I sometimes analogize what I do almost to being like an emergency room doctor. So I make myself available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I have our office has regular office hours, and after our office hours, we route the incoming calls automatically to some attorney's cell phone, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you go on my website, find our phone number. If you call it at 2 in the morning, you're going to get through to one of our attorneys. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we make ourselves available. And sometimes we do actually get those 2 in the morning calls because somebody might have, you know, been drinking and got a DUI or been in some type of trouble a domestic issue and the police are coming. You know, I've had all types of cases where or a family member gets arrested. Like sometimes people will have a family member that's just been arrested and it's 2 a.m. and they're at the police station and they need a lawyer right away to help them. So I get, you know, I make a point of being available, either me or somebody else from some other attorney from my office, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we, it's an easy thing to route the office phone number after hours to a cell phone. It's easy technology. We make sure we do that so that we can provide, you know, the best service to existing clients as well as new people that may need our services. Because unfortunately, these things can happen 24 hours a day.
Right. You know, you also mentioned something in the beginning of the show about immigration that's not really as relevant to licensed professionals. They don't always have immigration problems, but they sometimes can and do, especially if you have doctors and nurses who are over here on visas and are working.
Right.
And that is a very common issue. A lot of times people get stuck thinking of immigration as more as a migrant issue. No, there are plenty of great doctors here working on, you know, illegal on visas and whatnot, and so there's concerns there too. So all sorts of great information for people who have questions about all these things. Go check out Gus's website and check out Mike Favia's website as well. And again, just make a note that in case you ever need one of these guys, to give them a call. So Gus, I want to thank you for your time again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You too. Thank you very much, Nick. Have a nice day.
All right. Absolutely. Everyone have a great day, and please do share these episodes when you find them on social media or where else, because you just never know who is looking for exactly this type of information. So we do thank you all for your efforts in sharing our content, and we wish you all well. Have a great day.